Hey everyone, welcome to the Plastics Recycling Update. I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today, Bob Masterson, who is the President and CEO of the Chemistry Industry Association of Canada. I'll let Bob speak and perhaps introduce himself and the exciting work that they have going on.
Hi, Alkarim. Nice to speak with you and your audience. Well, you've introduced me, I guess, tell you a little bit more about our association. We represent the chemical and plastic manufacturers and importers in Canada, and combined, that's a $90 billion a year industry and Canada's third largest manufacturing sector. Coast to coast with plastics and with chemistries, we're largely focused on Ontario, Alberta, Quebec, and British Columbia. Why are we here? What's our role? And it's certainly changed over time, but what's our role today? We are trying to create a public policy environment that will allow the industry to sustain itself, to grow, and more importantly, and I think the topic of this conversation is to transform itself. The case of chemistry to a low carbon, zero carbon sector, and the case of plastics to a circular economy for plastics. And when you put them both together, it's for a circular, low carbon economy for plastics and the chemistries that help to produce those plastics.
Bob, I guess your organization recently launched a campaign called the Safe Plastic Campaign. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I think that's probably very relevant to recycling and obviously to our audience. Let's dive a little bit deeper into the Safe Plastic.
What we're trying to do with Save Plastics, and this is through the industry itself has funded this campaign, and it took about a year to nearly a year to design it before being launched. But we want to really change the conversation about plastics. The conversation about plastics in Canada, at least for the past 2+ years, has been very negative. We hear about all the negative attributes of plastics. We hear a lot about plastic waste. We know what we have to do. We know we have to transition to a circular economy for plastics. We know we have to start using and discussing plastics as a resource, not a waste. That's going to take a complete change in the conversation. People have to understand that yes, plastics have had disadvantages. We can address those, but we can't get away from the many advantages provided by plastics. And I have many examples I could share with you.
Yeah, please do share with us that ex those examples, because I think within the industry and obviously outside the industry, I think there's so much signal, so much noise as well around it. So I think it's important for us to understand that what are really the advantages of plastic, because I don't think they're talked about enough. And I think there are a lot of misunderstandings around this. And obviously we should talk about it on a factual basis, which you are going to do.
Yeah, sure. A simple example with you. I was speaking with a key partner organization today, and they were saying, hey, they've got stakeholders and they represent the EV industry, the electric vehicle industry. And they were saying, hey, we've got stakeholders who are telling us we have to make our EVs with zero plastic. And it's like, wait a minute. We know because the key attribute of plastic, of course, is it's lightweight and very innovative, but the more you want to transition to an electric vehicle, the more plastic you're going to have. You have to lightweight that thing. You're even doing things like replacing the little steel rivets that go to keep the insulation in the frame. You're replacing that with plastic resin adhesives. And the insulation itself is much thicker because you don't have the car noise. You've got to put more insulation on your door frames for those. So there's a type of conversation that has to take place where, yes, we have to address the issue of plastic waste. But if you think you're going to make an electric vehicle without plastic, without more and more plastic than in a current automobile, that is not a solution that's going to happen anytime soon. So there's a lot of education to do with people.
And obviously, in this case, plastic has a lightweighting advantage over other forms of materials. That means lower carbon. It might sound counterintuitive, but it really, at the end of the day, plastic being lightweight really adds to a lower carbon future. Yes, absolutely. We have some ways to go in terms of recycling that plastic. And recently, obviously, I'm sure you've seen some of these is 10% of plastics is being recycled within Canada. Maybe walk us through what is the reason? Why is only 10% of plastic recycled within Canada? And then
Lots to
perhaps,
unpack there. Okay, let's start. Maybe we'll start with the plastic. Where are we today and why? And maybe we'll get to where are we going and why? Because that's a really interesting story. Let's take Ontario. It's my favorite example, right? One of the reasons why we only have, and I'm going to talk about where we're getting it right and where we're going, even on recycling. Look at Ontario. Today, there are more than 250 competing municipal recycling programs. Remember that we treat it as a waste. Waste has a political geography. We manage the waste in the geography it's generated in. So the city of Ottawa has its own recycling program. The city of Kingston has its own program. Are they the same? Not at all. If you happen to have a home in Ottawa and you work in Ottawa and you have a cottage, maybe in Carleton Place or somewhere else, you recycle completely differently in all three of those places. So one of the biggest problems we have is the lack of understanding of how to recycle, because we have different rules in every place. So you'll hear people say, oh, we can't recycle black plastic. Sure you can, but somebody's had to invest in a nice optical scanner. Maybe your municipality hasn't, right? There's a good example. Oh, we can't recycle coffee cup lids. Sure you can. But if you're a city with 15,000 people, you probably aren't collecting enough that you're going to be able to get any market for those. So no, you don't recycle them. Can they be? Absolutely. Do other municipalities? Absolutely. So you've got that question of harmonization. That's one, different rules. People get confused. So you have a lot of contamination in the system. Two is the scale. Again, the large municipalities like Ottawa and Toronto, at least they're number ones and twos, and some of the other plastics, they can find a market for those. But the rest of them, you know, either small municipalities or the other threes to sevens, even the large cities have trouble collecting enough at scale to do anything with. So that's a challenge. You now have these municipalities all trying to go out and find buyers for the material. Well, you're going to drive to the lowest cost where you practically have to give this away or even pay people to take it away at times. And that's not a functioning business model. So one of the things I'd say very clearly is the business model for plastics is changing. It has to move towards circular. We have to recover and reuse these materials and truly treat them as a resource. And that will take place, but it's a journey that's going to have to happen to get us there. Maybe the question is, why do I have hope? Why do I think we can do that? And so what do I see happening today? Let's just look, start maybe with British Columbia, and some of your viewers are probably familiar with it. But in 2015, they introduced an extended producer responsibility program. What does that mean? It means the people that put the plastic and any other packaging in the BC economy are now responsible to operate the recycling system. Not the municipal taxpayers, the people that put the companies that put the material in. These could be brand owners. These could be newspapers. If you're talking about newspaper, you name it, you're putting material in, you're responsible to operate the recycling system now. So what's happened? In the first year they had data for plastics was 2017. And even by then, the province of British Columbia had 41% plastics packaging recovery, 98% of that recycled in British Columbia. Today, they're up to 56% of plastic packaging material recovered and still 98% of that reused, repurposed, remanufactured in British Columbia. And how did they do that? Well, one, like Ontario, they went from competing municipal systems down to one provincial system. The rules are the same in every municipality. Okay, so there's no confusion about how to do this. The industry is responsible for educating about how to recycle. Common message, every radio station, every bus advertisement in the whole province, you get the same message because we're doing it the same way. Industry is deciding what packaging to use based on the price to recover and recycle these materials. But they're also deciding on where these investments should go. Because think about this business model, again, what I said. If the business model is changing and we have to move and our customers are demanding and citizens are demanding we move to a circular economy for our plastics, if the only way to get there is to rely on municipalities that have been operating municipal recycling systems for 50 years, and the best we do is an average of 10% across the country, I would say that's a failed business model. That's never going to work. What the British Columbia model shows is now the industry controls this money for one purpose, to invest in recycling. It can happen. They can make a choice. We need a new optical scanner here. We're going to collect all the polystyrene. It's going to go to this location to get reprocessed. We can take all the coffee cup lids, one location. We can now market these at a mass scale for an economy of 5 million people, or in the case of Ontario, nearly 15 million, 12 million people. Now you can do things at scale that a small municipality can't. And that's where I think you're going to see the change. But look, in a world of post-COVID, business crisis, opioid crisis, fiscal challenges facing the municipalities, if any of your viewers believe that the solution is municipalities are going to fix recycling, it is not going to happen. So I'll finish by saying, what do we see today? We see Ontario, Alberta, Quebec, all following the example of British Columbia, all moving towards an industry-paid, industry-controlled extended producer responsibility system that will operate more or less province-wide in their own jurisdictions. And ultimately, hopefully, we get to a point where these link up together. And I think you'll see more and more provinces, and we already are seeing other provinces going down that road, where making industry responsible as part of its business model for how these materials will be recovered and repurposed as a true resource is going to be very important.
So here's what I'm hearing. Essentially, it's an infrastructure problem, right? It's municipalities have a lot of competing challenges in terms of they have so many priorities that you mentioned. Recycling is one of them. There's a lot of fragmentation within different municipalities. Investment is not going into the right place. With EPR, there is a centralized way to really manage recycling, which means producers can really take it to where they want to take it. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there is an increase of almost 20 percentage point in recycling
just in
BC.
One province. Yeah. Correct? I mean, if all provinces got to where BC were 50%,
yes,
that's remarkable.
It's huge.
I would correct one thing, though.
Yes,
I think the infrastructure is a secondary problem. The first problem is completely owned by industry, completely.
Got it. Right?
We can't recycle things that aren't designed to be recycled in the first
place.
And the only people that fix that is this industry, right?
Yeah.
The plastics industry.
Yeah.
And the pressures are there and the change is coming really fast. And the examples I love to use, because when do people get frustrated about their plastic? When they go in the grocery store and they see all this plastic and more every time they go in.
Yes.
They never ask why. And there's a great story about why. But I like to tell the story about this, the simple stand-up pouch. They're ubiquitous now. Why? Because they're so lightweight. And they perform so many fantastic functions.
Yes.
But traditionally, if that plastic is performing seven different functions, keeping light out, keeping moisture in, having line of sight to the product itself, having colorful design, seven, eight different functions, you had seven or eight different layers of plastic laminated together. Guess what? What do you do with that when you're done with it? It goes in the garbage. Yeah. So the real excitement now is seeing leading companies designing those pouches to be 100% recyclable in the first place. So we can put bins. And then the second innovation, of course, is, and you're seeing this in British Columbia, we have, well, I guess we call them post-consumer recyclate rather than resins, but you have companies in British Columbia today that are producing post-consumer polyethylene recyclate that is food grade ready. So, wow, fantastic. Not only can we make plastic pouches that are recyclable, we're coming to the day when we can make them with recycled content. So now you're really talking about a circular economy. So that's the one correction I'd make. The problem, the first problem is first and foremost a design issue, and that has to change, and that's 100% the responsibility of the industry.
Yeah. You talked about the stand-up pouch.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is ubiquitous, the fact that it is very lightweight, it has a ton of advantages. But when you go in as a consumer with all the negativity around plastic, you start to think to yourself, I don't want to buy that because I know there's a 10% chance it will be recycled. But what happens in a world where that stand-up pouch doesn't exist? If plastic didn't exist, what repercussions do we have to that food that then goes bad and that, you know, other material that we are using?
Well, there's other materials.
There's all of these.
So you got two different things. I think we talk about, you go down your produce aisle. And even you go to get your grapes, I got people tell them, wow, I was a kid, my parents never bought grapes in a bag and a plastic net. Why is all this plastic? And it's like, okay, well, what about those grapes? So I go in the store and I want only the best grapes for me. And I start to handle them and I pick out the ones I like. Well, all those other grapes I touched, hey, do you really want my hands on your grapes? Probably not. Second, as soon as I touch them with my hands, they really quickly start to decay from the acids and other things that are on our fingers. And the next thing you know, all the ones I've touched, nobody else wants, and they go to waste. What's the beauty of the plastic net? Here's your bag of grapes. Take it. You can pick which bag you want, but take your grapes. Zero wastage in the store for grapes. And so you see that with all the different produce. So that's one important attribute. You can have food preservation. You can have zero in-store waste. What a waste. Grow all that food, get it to a store, and have it thrown in the dumpster behind the store. It doesn't even get to the customer. That's just crazy. Now, when you walk down the other aisles, though, and another example, like I get astounded every time I go in. I'm in my late 50s. My children are all grown up. But I go down, if I happen to pass the baby food aisle, I go, hey, where's my little glass jars with the metal lid? Gone. It's all plastic stand-up pouches. Why? Well, weight of the product. easy to close and reuse. Safety, you can drop that bag on the floor and no kid's going to cut their toes or anything. But the most important thing, of course, is we're talking about very low value. I apologize, food is expensive. It's very expensive today. But in our individual segments, we're talking about a very low value product, and a lot, depending on the material, a large percentage of the cost to get that to the consumer is purely the transportation distribution cost. So everything you do reduce the weight of that product is going to have an economic advantage to the consumer, but it's also going to have an environmental advantage from using less fuel and less emissions. So, you know, people need, they do really need to ask that question. Why are we seeing so much plastic in the store? And it depends on which part of the grocery store aisle you're in. You're going to have a different answer, but it all comes back to the attributes of plastic being beneficial over any of the other alternatives in many applications.
Do you have any idea, across Canada, how much carbon emissions are saved because of plastic? And if plastics didn't exist, what that number would look like instead as a ballpark?
I don't have that. What I do know, and your readers can find this online, but McKinsey did a study last year for the United States, and they looked at 40-some different products made from plastic or packaged in plastic. And in, I think in all but one instance, those products had a considerable environmental advantage, not just greenhouse gas, but other advantage over any other of the alternatives to them. So I'm more familiar, and you'll see in this campaign we're running, we're trying to put out some of the comparables about, here's a plastic product, this is what it looks like, here's the carbon footprint of this, here's an alternative, and there's the carbon footprint of that. So a bit of the comparison on a product by product basis, but I don't have an overall one. What I would say, though, and this is part of where's this industry going, and in Canada, we're, there's two parts of the plastics industry in Canada, right? Both we make plastic products and consume them, but we also are one of the rare countries that has a very large and substantive plastic resin generating business, right? And when you look at those companies, make no mistake, producing ethylene is the second largest commodity chemical produced in the world, right behind ammonia. And it has the second largest greenhouse gas footprint, right behind ammonia. And so when the industry looks, that upstream resin producing industry looks and says, how do we get to net zero? We have to address this climate challenge. A significant portion of that framework for getting to net zero is the replacement of primary plastics through recovered post-consumer plastics. Some estimates, perhaps up to a third of primary plastic production could ultimately be replaced by recovered materials. So it's going to play a big part, not only in addressing circular economy and reducing emissions of our consumers, but it's also going to play a really important part in decarbonizing the upstream resin producing industry.
Bob, let's switch gears a little bit to the Canadian government has a target to do zero plastic waste by 2030, which is what they announced a couple of years ago. Any thoughts around this, what the government is doing to reach there? Any thoughts on how individuals can play a role in this process, apart from what we've already discussed in terms of EPR, et cetera?
Well, let's start with talking about what the industry has committed to. So the industry has said in Canada and in all of North America has said by 2030, which is not very far away, we got 100% of our packaging will be designed to be recyclable. Back to our problem number one I talked about.
Exactly. So
and we don't need a government to do anything. We have to do it. And that's already taking place. Lots of, and I'd like to talk in a minute about all the innovations taking place. The second thing we've said is we will work with stakeholders to make sure 100% of plastic packaging is recovered and recycled by 2040. Now, there's some stakeholders like the Canada Plastic Pack and Ellen MacArthur Foundation that think that should go a lot faster. There's no question it should go a lot faster. The question is, can it? And that's the conversation that has to happen. What is the federal government doing? No secret to most of your viewers, but the first thing they're doing is banning six single-use plastics as their vernacular, the six single-use plastics. But those are very important to the companies, especially the companies that produce them. And bans is not a solution to the problem. But at the end of the day, it's not going to make a material difference in the plastic flows in the economy. The interesting things they're doing, I think, and I would say here they're following what industry and our customers are doing rather than leading, but you will see some legislated targets in the area of recycled content whether that's a portfolio basis for individual products, you're going to see that. And they are also going to be legislating all of the provinces to move towards the industry-led, industry-paid, extended producer responsibility type programs that I described before. So we've got those that have moved voluntarily and in the lead, BC, Alberta, Quebec, Ontario. The rest of the provinces are going to have to follow quickly as well. So the federal government's got a role, but those measures aside, let me take a bigger step back and say this. Whether we're talking about the drive to zero carbon or low carbon chemistry and plastics production, or we're talking about a circular economy for plastics, we're talking about one thing. We're not talking about environmental policy. We're talking about investment policy in Canada. These changes that have to take place will take place. The industry's committed to do it. It's going to take billions upon billions of dollars to do it. There's only one question. Where will the industry make those investments? Are they going to do it in Canada, or will they make it in the United States? Unlikely, but possibly. And there are some advantages, at least for plastics, in Europe. We have to do a better case to attract this investment here in Canada. I'll be frank with you. I say this to our colleagues in government all the time. Our number one criticism of the federal plastic strategy is that zero waste plastic strategy is you could take that and apply it to any post-industrial nation worldwide. You could say, hey, New Zealand, here's a nice zero waste plastic strategy for you. Sounds great. What it ignores is the fact that Canada is a top 10 plastic resin and plastic producer. The stuff we make goes all over the world. And we are a significant contributor to the economy, $30 billion for plastics alone. And so we have to have a strategy that, yes, gets us to zero, but recognizes that we have challenges, but also enormous opportunities when we think about how to get this material back in as feedstock into the upstream recyclate and resin producing industry. If the government tries to do this on a product by product basis, A, it will be restricted to developments in Canada only, and B, it will not enable this industry to transform the way it needs to. And we believe that if we can find the ways to make the entire industry more circular, we'll get a carbon advantage as well. But again, if 80% of the plastic resin we produce in Canada goes offshore, that means we're providing a circular solution offshore as well. We can send pellets recyclate with recycled, recovered content in it to all of our customers and not just worry about a small domestic market in Canada. So there's lots of things in play, and I think we'll see lots of more policy action. But at the end of the day, I would say the most important thing is for the government of Canada and the provinces to work on the investment conditions. Some good news, I think we've seen some announcements both in Alberta and British Columbia on funding for circular economy, the innovation that needs to take place, and between them, well over $100 million. So we need to see the federal government make a significant commitment to that innovation and infrastructure as well. There's lots of other plastics, right? We've talked a lot about packaging. The truth is, despite the design issues, a lot of that is relatively easy to recycle. Back to the idea of automotives, or even thinking about things like wind turbines and solar panels, people don't understand how much plastic is in there. Well, listen, a wind turbine is designed to withstand a tornado. It's not going to come apart easily. So there's a heck of a lot of innovation that's going to have to take place to think about how we can take a car bumper or a car headlight or a wind turbine and think about how to design that to be recyclable and to recover and reuse those materials in a meaningful way without just downgrading it to asphalt supplements, basically. So there's a lot of work to do in that space as well. And the government can play a key role in working with the industry to develop those solutions.
Yeah, and I think that's what I love about the Safe Plastic Campaign is it's a mammoth task, not only to help people understand where plastic goes, because we see it everywhere, but I don't think we realize the benefits of it. The benefits not only to ourselves in our own lives, but the benefit to the environment. Obviously, we have a long way to go as an industry to be able to, as you mentioned, the two things in terms of designing, investing in innovation, to be able to reach that reality. But I mean, it seems like it's impossible for a world to be without plastic. It's something that we cannot ignore.
No, I think Canadians in particular really saw that throughout COVID, the role, understanding, wait a minute, look at plastic and the role it played in health protection throughout the pandemic. On the other hand, though, man, if you ever want to think about the problem of litter, it's incredible to see how many masks there are every day still littering the community. And so you're back to this problem, but wait a minute, we have something that's designed not to be recycled. We can't even get people to put it in the garbage, let alone a recyclable material into a blue bin. So again, challenges for design, challenges for recovery and repurposing material. But there's a great example of the dilemma we face, a critical product, so important to the health and well-being of Canadians, and a significant contributor to the litter that gives the product a bad name. It should give citizens a bad name, but it gives the product a bad, gives the material a bad name.
Yes. That's wonderful. Bob, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and it's been a pleasure discussing some of the things that usually are difficult to understand, but thanks for shedding light on them. Maybe as a closing remarks, help us to understand where we can find you, where our audience can follow you, how we can support you in spreading the word about plastics.
Yeah, well, let me take those in reverse order then. I think the most important thing people can do is A, have hope. I think it's a fantastic time to be involved in the industry. There was an article 2 weeks ago in one of the plastics trade magazines, and it said that this was from 2017 through 2018, that the number of patents issued for recyclable plastics increased by 130% in 2 years. And that was 2018. Sorry, it was 2018 to 2020. And I wrote on my LinkedIn profile, I said, I can't imagine, that was up to 2020. I can't imagine the rate of growth in the last 2 years, 2020 to 2022, and what it's going to look like in the next few years. So it's an incredibly dynamic time, and people should take hope from all the attention on the issue. They should take hope from getting the political systems, the organizational processes working like they have in BC and like what's coming along in the other provinces. They should know that the people that are designing these products are finally truly thinking of design for recyclability as a primary goal, not a market afterthought for a specialized customer base. This is primary focus, has to be to do that. So lots of positives. Again, the challenge will be to get the investment right. I think what people can do in the industry is they have to tell their own story better, right? Like, we're a small organization with a very small budget, and we do what we can for our members. Our challenge is that much of the industry is not customer facing, right? We don't make plastics, with a few exceptions, that face the customer. It all goes through the brand owners. And some of them are very supportive and responsive and work closely with us. And sometimes it feels like others would be okay without plastics in their portfolio. So I think for the industry to find ways to work with their employees and the employees' families to better understand the attributes of plastic and why it's necessary, but more importantly, to work with your own customers to make the case. So again, back to where I started the conversation, what does an electric vehicle look like without plastics? That doesn't sound like a realistic conversation. So making sure your customers are empowered to have the conversations with the stakeholders, whether they be in government or their own customers, about why shouldn't we get out of plastics? They have to have the ammunition, they have to have the facts to help counter those perceptions. And that's part of what the Saving Plastics thing is about, is to provide the industry and to provide the stakeholders with some science-based information on why plastics, why is plastics there? How do we save this $8 billion resource from landfill and put it to better use? And in terms of how you can find us, you can look us up, of course, on the web, Chemistry Industry Association of Canada, and you'll find a number of resources there, but you can also get in touch with myself or any of our staff.
Lovely. Thanks, Bob. It was wonderful speaking with you, and I hope we can chat again soon.
Yeah, thank you for your interest. Really appreciate this. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Take care.